Across Europe, this is Previously in Europe, a podcast about what's previously in Europe. Hosted by me, Hugh O'Brien, in London, and my beautiful co-host, Kieran Dold, in Berlin. Say hello, Kieran.
It's so sweaty in Berlin. I'm melting. I'm turning into soup of some sort.
Yes, I was in Berlin last week, and I was very melty, and I'm back in London, where the weather has been awful the entire time, which is... that's fine. I wasn't planning going outside today anyway. We have a good show for you this week. We are going to discuss the rumblings and potentially official S&D position of the EU-wide minimum wage in a new section we'd like to call That Would Be Nice. That would be nice, an EU minimum wage, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. It would. Well, kind of.
Yeah. That's why we're going to talk about it. It's complicated.
Yeah, yeah. So there's definitely a vision of a EU-wide minimum wage that we would consider nice. But there is, like, yeah, there's problems with the concept of a minimum wage. There are hurdles within Europe, both on, like, a pan-European level and a, like, individual nations level.
Yeah.
That would be, you know, required to be overcome if you were to propose this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then also, yeah, yeah, so should we give the context first of, like, you kind of alluded to it, but yeah. So the context of this is that basically Frans Timmermans was a big boy and was proposing this as a part of his Spitzenkandidat election in the European Parliament.
Yeah.
A lot of things that happen in terms of the Spitzenkandidat elections don't really come to fruition.
No.
We're also seeing other people in, like, his kind of political camp make similar claims. This is just before recording, we found that this is being backed by Sanchez in Spain and Muscat in Malta.
Yep.
This is other countries where the center left is in power. The center left is is gaining a bit more ground in Europe, I would argue. Mostly with the support of the far left. I wonder if they themselves have realized that yet. But, like, Finland's new government was sworn in, and it's a red-red-green alliance. Yeah. So this is something that's being proposed, and also on top of this is both Macron and Merkel have kind of paid lip service to this idea. In the last week, they were at the ILO, the International Labour Organization, meeting in Geneva.
Yeah.
And they kind of, like, both talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Macron is in favor of it, although he didn't go into specifics about what that would look like. Merkel was a bit more, naturally, as Merkel is, kind of on the fence about the concept.
Yeah.
She basically did everything to not outright reject the idea.
I think I would kind of her quote was, like, comparable minimum wage.
Yes.
Kind of implying that there should be one everywhere, which... might also be the actual view of a lot of people advocating for this. It's unclear because it kind of gets mentioned in almost in passing a lot.
So this is we should mention that, like, basically all the 28 countries in Europe have the minimum wage except for 6: Cyprus, Italy, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, and Austria do not have a nationally set minimum wage. But there are effective minimums. But that kind of, like, wiggle room in some countries allows for some, like, dodgy politics and dodgy labor practices.
Yeah.
We might get into that a bit later, or I can get into it now. Get into it now. Okay, so easiest one to talk about is Sweden, Denmark, and Finland, because their wage system all basically works the exact same. Labor unions, like, based on sectors, will negotiate your wages on your behalf. So what this basically means is they have, in Sweden, for example, they have a union that represents all retail workers.
Yeah.
This is different from, like, some other countries where unions are based around specific workplaces. These are, like, sectoral unions.
Yeah.
They negotiate the wage. The law in Sweden, if I remember correctly, is you cannot pay 30% lower than that set wage. Even if you're not a member of that union. So you can be a retail worker and not be a member of that union, but, like, membership of unions in these countries are actually quite high.
Yeah.
an example of dodgy politics is that, like, this is given the ground and, like, somewhat legal ground for, like, far-right parties in Denmark to suggest the idea of having a special minimum wage that's really, really low for refugees and asylum seekers, which was rejected, but, like, technically legal as, like, a position.
Which
is kind of shitty. So
as basically, it's on the grounds of, well, there's no mechanism by which you're saying that we have to pay them that anyway. They have to become members of this union first, and we can just basically make it that they can't join the union, and then set a different value for them. It's just like, well,
that gets into really dodgy stuff. The other side of this as well, and we'll get back to this when we talk about the idea broadly, is that these three countries would probably see the introduction of, like, an actual minimum wage as, depending on who's proposing it, as a means to undermine the unions. This is something that happens slowly in these in these countries, particularly Sweden, if I remember correctly, where the power of the unions are getting less and less, and, like, more in favor of employers. So it's not it's hypothetically possible that it might be a sheep in wolf's clothing that a minimum wage is introduced, but with that comes the caveats that, like, collective bargaining stuff is, like, reduced in power. Then I guess I can talk about Italy, which is a very similar situation where each sector has a minimum wage set by a sectoral union. However, those unions are not really as strong as their Nordic counterparts. And the range of the wages... this would be the big difference. If you're not a member of the union, you don't get that wage. Which is a real problem, because the lowest minimum... So basically, each sector has a minimum wage that has been set by collective bargaining. The lowest one is for agricultural work. If I remember correctly, it's about it's €874.65 per month. And that's for agricultural work. But if you're not a member of the union, which a lot of, like, agricultural laborers tend not to be,
because
you can be paid
it's seasonal and stuff as well. That's a bit shit.
So something similar happens in Cyprus, but Cyprus has a different system. Cyprus's system is that there is no official minimum wage. However, there is a minimum wage that is set for sectors. So this is kind of hard to explain, but basically there is a minimum wage of €870 per month. But that minimum wage is only available for, like, a list of sectors and jobs that would be considered low wage work. So it's like a wage that's specifically for teachers, retail workers, nurses, kind of jobs that... In any other country, if you saw that list of jobs, it's like, oh yeah, these are the jobs that will get paid minimum wage or a lot less if the employers can figure out a way to do that.
It's funny, like, some of the stuff on that list, you're like, those are things that a lot of people, you know, have good arguments for. It should be in a much higher, should be well paid to begin with. And the idea people are trying to, like, scrimp on them should be... I guess this minimum wage system is one way of doing it, but you should have caveats for it, like nurses and teachers.
It's a weird system where, like, basically every other job would probably not be getting paid this low. They've set this threshold for certain sectors because they know there are sectors that usually get shitty wages. The issue you get in Cyprus then is that people will say that the list of sectors and jobs that are on that wage is, like, not comprehensive enough.
That's the problem. Once you have a finite list, is you're then... The onus is on you to include everything on the list.
And then lastly, we have Austria, which is, like, this, again, kind of collective bargaining situation that I think Germany used to run on very recently. Like, Germany's minimum wage was only introduced very, very recently. But it's, like, the social market economy where there is, like, employee representation on the board... Their wages are decided at that level. And again, this applies for, like, unlike the other countries, it's not sector by sector. If I understand correctly, it is, like, workplace by workplace, almost. But it is done through, like, employee collective bargaining, and unions are involved to a certain extent. The other weird caveat with the Austrian system is that there is a... there is a lower threshold that exists. It's not called minimum wage, but basically, like, the unions and the, like, employers can never really propose lower than this, which is a weird way of implementing the system, which is 1,500 per month. That is, like, the lowest wage you can have in Austria legally.
Yeah.
The other side of that is that Austrians get 14 salaries per year, one for each month, and then an additional one in July, I think, and an additional one in December, both referred to as the holiday bonus and the Christmas bonus.
Right, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so you basically just get double wages for 2 months of the year.
Sweet.
Yeah, it is pretty, and it's also the bonus ones are taxed less than your regular wage.
Right, okay.
It's pretty sick. It's a pretty good system. It's pretty good. But naturally, because of these things, I think only Cyprus and Italy would be welcoming to an idea of an EU-wide minimum wage.
From the list of those that don't already have it. Because effectively, like, Austria has a more complicated but in some ways better system. But does have the problem of, once you have sector collective bargaining, you're then like, well, then that only works if the collective bargaining system is covering all employees in some way, or is, like, at least touching every sector, which might be true at any one individual point in time, but is kind of like a flimsier system that's easier to kind of chip away at.
Yeah, it's also worth pointing out that through Denmark and Finland's collective bargaining system, the effective lowest wage possible within those countries are some of the highest in the continent.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Denmark is the highest in the continent.
Yeah.
However, that's also due to probably the nature of the Danish krone. I don't know how it necessarily reflects in terms of purchasing power, but that's something we'll get into.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing about the one of the, like, obvious reasons why you wouldn't want this from, like, a left-wing perspective would be that this would decrease motivation for union membership and the collective bargaining power of the union if they're basically, like, negotiating for, you know, small amounts more or in some areas. So one of the motivations of the UK minimum wage that's, like, cited in everything I can find about it is that it was an acknowledgement of during the 80s and the start of the 90s that trade union membership was down quite substantially, and therefore in effect, because of their membership was lower, their collective bargaining power was lower. The previous mechanisms by which wage there was, like, semi, like, sector-based minimum wages set had been gradually dismantled over time, partly due to good collective bargaining systems. But then you're like, once the collective bargaining systems wear down, there's no, like, there's no under level that they can drop down to if they can't negotiate a new system. It's interesting that, like, that's the converse reason, is the, okay, well, collective bargaining rights are already bad, so we're not going to convince everyone tomorrow to go join their labor union. We can try, but it's not going to be that quick. So a faster way is to introduce what at the time was a hilariously low minimum wage.
It's very reminiscent of something that happened in the States as well, that, like, back in the day, I think there was, like, it was back in the New Deal times, like post-World War II United States, New Deal was pre-World War II, post-World War I, right?
Yes, post-Depression thing.
Yeah, post-Depression time. There was, like, plans to have a universal healthcare system in the United States, but it was opposed by the unions,
right?
Because healthcare was guaranteed by your union, and it was considered, like, one of the biggest draw to join a union.
Yeah.
But union membership in the States just went down anyway.
Yeah, I think that's a, you know, common problem across the Anglosphere anyway. So,
yeah,
decreasing union membership for various reasons.
I think there's, like, we talked about it off mic, but there is, like, threats within, like, a lot of Swedish people and Danish and Finnish people and Norwegian people as well, because there's a similar system in Norway, but it's not in the EU, is that there are active forces in their government that are trying to dismantle or defang the unions, which union membership are high in those countries, but, like, it's kind of this weird chicken or egg situation where do people leave the unions because of disinterest, or was it because there was active efforts by people in the government to make them less powerful? Yeah. That's probably the second one.
Yeah. Or, you know, just a combination of the two, and it's then there is an effect of, well, in places of strong labor unions, then the labor unions win lots of rights for people, and then they're like, well, some of these things are now fine, so I'm not going to pay my union dues, and then the union loses its collective bargaining, and then you end up in this weird cycle where, in theory, yeah. if you're looking at, like, you know, supply and demand market forces, at some point people's wage like conditions will get so bad they'll reunionize, which in some industries you are seeing, like, you see, like, it gets publicized a lot because it's their industry, but, like, there's a lot of, like, journalism outfits that are unionizing. And not just, like, the, you know, the ones that get like heavily covered online, like the one that's happening at, like, Vox Media, but that is happening at, like, small publishing houses and stuff in the UK. And
York Times union starting, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's largely around, like, a similar thing of, well, we didn't used to have a problem with our employer, but actually the more we thought about it, and once we got established in the industry, it appeared that we did have a problem and we needed to sort it out. So I, like, going back to the UK example, I think this is possibly an example of how you would do this and not have an impact on the trade unions in, like, a big way. So they introduced a very, very low minimum wage, which was £3.60 an hour. To put that in context, like, the current minimum wage in the UK is, like, it's £9 something, I think.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, that's pretty substantial difference between... Sorry, no, it's 8.21. It's, like, 9 in London for some reason, because they have a London surplus thing on.
Because London's stupidly expensive.
Yeah, it's the disproportionality problem. It's a lot more, like, proportionally expensive. But I was, like, I did a little bit of digging about this. I found, like, I found some articles from The Economist from the time who are effectively saying that, like, this rate is so low that, there's, like, a proportion of people under it, but realistically you're increasing their wage by a low enough rate that they're unlikely to lose employment over the wage change, unless there was some sort of central bank massive switch in interest rates or something to... balance out any effect this has on the wider market, which they didn't seem to think was very likely, that this would really not have a negative impact, because it was such a low rate. It was really only impacting the people at the very, very low end of the spectrum, which I think, you know, related to people's concerns about, oh, the EU is very complicated and places like Austria would have resistance to this because you might introduce something that would be, or the Nordic countries would be, you know, because it would potentially go towards defanging their labor unions. Potentially you could introduce a rate that is so low that it wouldn't do that, but it would it would be, like, a safeguard that would make it a, like, EU-level employment violation on top of any national employment violation to, you know, pay people under the minimum.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different proposals about how to do this, and I think we should probably tackle, as a first proposal, or a first idea of doing this, is what has been stated by Frans Timmermans.
Yeah.
So we should clarify, there isn't really a policy paper on this. While a lot of people are talking about the idea, it's still a bit up in the air, a bit airy-fairy, and also, through my research, I found out that it was also proposed in, like, 2013, but back then, even with less detail.
So they just say, like, minimum wage and left the room.
Pretty much, yeah. So Frans Timmermans' idea is that the minimum wage in every EU country should be 60% of the median wage. So for most countries, from my basic calculations, this would be an increase, a fairly substantial increase per month, with the exception of, well, most countries, it's over 100 euro increase.
Yeah.
With the exception of Portugal, where it's only, like, a 44 euro increase, 45 euro increase.
Yeah.
And then Malta and Greece, it's actually negative. Because the disparate, like, because the minimum wage and the median wage in those countries are so close to each other, results in actually 60% of the median wage being lower than the actual set minimum wage.
Yeah. But I think like there's some countries that would hate this because like Luxembourg as an example already has the highest minimum wage at like 2,000 euro, and this would bump it up to almost 3,000 euro because the median wage in Luxembourg is 5 grand a month.
Yeah, I'm like somewhat apprehensive about tying it to a median wage.
Yeah.
I have like kind of like two reasons for that. One, I like a percentage based system. I should say that if we're going to be very positive here, I do think that like a medium, like an actual decent minimum wage in a country should be relative to some other score that affects, or like some other like data points that actually affects people's lives.
Yeah.
Whether you tie it to like some sort of rent index or something like that, or purchasing power or cost of living expense. Yeah, that's basically how the minimum wage should be calculated, because a huge problem you get with minimum wages is that you would constantly have to fight for them to be increasing.
Yeah.
I think I said this off mic, but a classic example is in the United States, you have the Fight for 15, where I've heard critics of that movement from the left say that like, oh, when we started this, $15 an hour was a decent wage, but because of changes in like inflation and stuff, we should probably be talking about like Fight for 20 now.
Yeah, I think the example is like if you take something like a McDonald's worker and place for McDonald's, like a lot of them tend to be are in giant cities where 15 would still be like quite a bad wage, in terms of like actual physically being able to live.
The other reason I would be like concerned about tying into the median wage is that it falls into this kind of like concept that I think is an incorrect assumption, which is that like the middle class of a country is like safe from, you know, austerity of like a politics that seeks to remove their like labor rights and benefits and things like that.
Yeah.
Because if you tie something to the median wage, then I think people with the levers of power would be very happy to like lower the median wage or find ways to do that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Or just kind of, as in like the median wage overall would probably change as the effect of this, but an individual company would take a look at it and be like, well, if we need to pay all of our lowest paid employees an extra grand a month, their managers are definitely going to make less money. Because like our net outgoings isn't, we don't want it to change too much. So it might like increase a little bit, but they'll basically be like, cool, so that's fine. You're like, your starting wage is higher, but like if you progress in this company, you won't make any more money. It's like,
yeah, I think the other assumption is, well, that like the median wage in a country is good enough. That's also another like problematic assumption, because the median wage in, a good example of this is like the median wage in Ireland is 3,300 euro, according to the latest figures.
Yeah.
But a one bedroom in Dublin costs probably about 1,000 nowadays, if not higher.
It's definitely more.
It's actually probably like 1,700.
Yeah.
I think at the moment. Yeah. And that is higher than 30%, which is the recommended amount that your wage be tied to in terms of rent, that your rent should be like 30% of your take home. And also, sorry, the median wage, I should mention, this is pre-taxes. This is gross. This isn't net. So you get into the situation of actually the median wage in some of these countries aren't livable wages for a lot of people, depending on their situation. It was like, oh, if you can't make 3,300 work in Dublin, maybe you should move. It's like, well, then I won't have a wage that pays 3,300.
Yeah, and I have dependents. The often thing that's missing from this.
Yeah, for sure. So that's my problem with like tying it to median wage. I think Frans Timmermans is right that it should be, that he correctly identified that in Europe, if we're doing it European wide, it should be relative, and it should be, and I like the idea of tying it to a percentage of something.
Yeah. I think the core issue I have with it is, so I was at a company once where, the office I worked in was in the UK, and the main office of the company was in California, and they basically brought in, because California was so expensive, they brought in like a minimum starting, they brought in a minimum wage for the company that was like way, way higher than any minimum wage requirement they had to do. I think it was like $40,000, which is, you know, substantial for like a compared to what it was at. Let's just say. And they basically were like, oh, to make like it wouldn't be fair if we didn't also do this in the UK. So I think I ended up with like a very substantial increase in pay. But from talking to people who were like higher up the rung to me, like a few higher, like a few, like my manager's manager's manager, they're like, they were already very well paid. That didn't matter. They weren't going to get a pay bump. But like the person immediately ahead of me was basically like, I got a pay bump, but it was like, you know, a third of what you got as a pay bump. So it was kind of like a weird thing of like, you made the company more equal, but actually you shallowed out, like the, a lot of people in the middle weren't actually earning any more money, despite the fact the company was like, we have money spare, we're going to give it out. I was like, but all these people were underpaid. You were underpaying everybody.
Yeah. So this is, that's kind of like what I was getting out of the median wage basically just not being good enough as it is.
So that was a way to, you know, basically make it that the median wage of the company wouldn't have increased. Like, the median wage would increase, but the, like, mean would just, it was like, it was squishing down the distribution a bit, but not from the top at all. If anything, the top was like proportionally as far away as it always was, which I think is like, you know, a reasonable issue with this is that in terms of like how individual companies would operate is they wouldn't find the money by taking money off the top earners. They would find money by not progressing middle people any further or giving them like inflation wage increases and stuff. They would find the money somewhere to do this. If you just increase the minimum wage at like this like mystery number that's connected to a percentage of median wage as it is.
So I guess that's kind of like I think it would also probably contribute, if I haven't said this already, it would also probably contribute over time to like stagnant wages that like, which, you know, is already happening. Yeah, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But it would probably incentivize wages to stay the same.
Yeah.
Because if median wage affects the minimum wage.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get into this kind of like nonsense stuff. So I guess we can start talking about like what we'd ideally like. Yeah,
that sounds good.
So this is probably first idea I'm probably going to spitball off the top of my head is that, first of all, the center left weren't the only people talking about this. The United European Left candidate for European Commissioner was also talking about this. Mm-hmm. She criticized the idea of it being tied to a median wage.
Yeah.
She mentioned that it should be something more like cost of living.
Yep.
That it should reflect a purchase that people have to make.
Yep.
And one way I thought would be an interesting way of doing it, I'd be very interested to see your thoughts on this, is that if the recommended amount of your wage has to go towards rent.
Mm, you tie it to rent.
Yeah, right. So like 30% is the recommended amount. That 30% of your take home should go towards rent.
Yep.
On a monthly basis. So yeah, can we do something like that where the wage goes up if the rent goes up? Because the other side I'd like to see in minimum wages more often is actually regional disparities. Because like London already has to do a system where the London wage is higher than the rest of the country because London is more expensive than the rest of the country.
Yeah.
But the problem of making like that special exemption is that there are other parts of the UK that are more expensive than the surrounding area or where the minimum wage is probably not good enough. Places surrounding London but aren't technically considered London are fairly expensive.
Yeah, that was also the common complaint of people in when I used to live in Cambridge. The complaint was especially
Cambridge and Oxford,
like so people in academia. There's like, so if you're a PhD student, there's like an additional, it's like a grand a year you get for living in London. It's not like a lot of money, but it's like you know, an acknowledgement that it's the actual bursary is physically not livable in London. But the people in Cambridge would complain, basically being like, But my rent in Cambridge is the same as like a comparable, because it's so overpopulated. It's the same problem, but there's just no acknowledgement exactly. Like, there's no calculation in like the town or city I live in that is also expensive, but it's just not quite as expensive as London, but getting there. and mm-hmm. I have like a grand less, which actually goes a very long way when you're on like 16k. It's not it's a big difference at that perspective. Yeah. Rent's an interesting idea. I think as we were talking about, the real danger if you tie it to like a median wage is that companies will work out like that they'll just, you know, stagnate people's wages in the middle to keep the median wage low, so they don't accidentally increase minimum wage. I was like, well, similar example with rent would be, oh, what if all like the people who are like big landlords are also big companies that have to pay lots of minimum wage people. What if they start lowering rents? We're like, well, that's a great idea.
Or the other idea is like, what if we made a bunch of low cost apartments to drive the median down? It's like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh yeah, keep talking. And if it's like if it's regional disparity you're looking for, oh, just like, yeah, build some of them in like centers of big cities. That'd be great.
So I think the only thing you'd have to like overcome, despite the like the six countries in the EU that don't have minimum wages, I think no matter which system we suggest, that's always going to be a barrier.
Yeah.
The other thing would be, I would say, is that there's a lot of countries in the EU that probably don't have decent information or means of measuring rent and regional and area like area yeah. rent.
That's a common problem, because yeah. anytime I ever see like average rental, like rental figures or like house price figures for anywhere I've ever lived, I then often see the immediate complaint from people I know saying, I've never been able to find an apartment at that value. Where have you found this magic apartment? Or like if you're trying to look into buying a house and banks will like sell you one like, oh, you could qualify for this mortgage, which could buy you this and this place, and you're like, no, it couldn't. I've never seen like I don't think there's a apartment or a house for sale for that amount of money where you're saying it is. There may have been once and you're using that number. I don't know.
Yeah, so I guess the exception to this is the country I live in. Germany keeps a very, very close eye on like rent index.
Yeah.
But that's because, again, Germany is the exception here, because Germany is a country of renters.
Yes.
The entire like,
but do you know off the top of your head if like your experience of having recently moved to Germany, do you find like their numbers on that gel at all with your experience of what was a kind of going rate for an apartment?
Yes.
Yeah, right, okay.
I am familiar with like the UK and Ireland, where like things would be, you know, average rents or like, well, basically showing the figure of average, but like the average has been like a wackadoo number because there's like one hovel that's like for 150 euro that's dragging all the rest of the numbers down.
Yeah. But then some places it's just like, well, there are some normal apartments here, but then there are also several 5 million.
Yeah, exactly.
Ruining this number.
Yeah. So like a median apartment rate, and like also you get into this like, average price for like one bedroom, or what it would cost to like share an apartment with one person.
Yes. Yeah.
Like Germany is very on board with that because, and this is part of it, there are laws in the books that protect you if you're being overcharged.
Uh-huh.
Basically, there is such a thing as being overcharged rent.
All right,
in okay. Germany, and that's based on the average price of the rent in your area. So these numbers have to be like monitored.
Oh man, that'd be great.
Yeah, right. So that's my only issue with the idea of tying it to rent, is it's possibly a bit of a cart before the horse situation.
Yeah.
Really, what you would have to improve like tenants' rights in all these countries before introducing the system.
Yeah. The one that's so Eurostat, the official European Union statistics agency, they're talking about minimum wage and its disparity across Europe and giving that information. They're basically saying that, like, so the, like, raw euro value difference, like, Bulgaria is, like, 500 or 600 or something, less.
It's like, ooh, hang on, it is less. It's the minimum wage of Bulgaria, so, yeah, 260 euro, 76 yeah.
cents. Okay, so it's 260 euro, and the minimum wage for Luxembourg is, like, 2 grand, which is, like, roughly a 10x difference. But if you look at, they then also show scaling it by purchasing power standard, PPS, mm-hmm. which is like a theoretical currency unit, which is in theory supposed to buy the same amount of goods in every country, goods and services in every country that's applied to. So you work out like your PPS multiplier for your country is how you do it, based on like white goods and other things to calculate.
The Big Mac index.
Yeah, so it's like not dissimilar to how they would calculate things like inflation. They're basically trying to work out on like things that you actually purchase.
Yeah, I joked there about the Big Mac index, but these numbers are available because this is how McDonald's operates. They know how much to charge for a Big Mac in every country they operate in.
Yeah, yeah, because they're they're in the bulk business. They're not in the aspirational.
Yeah,
we need to make our margins on this. The and so if you look at that graph, like there is still like so. Bulgaria is still the lowest, but it's at about 6,550 kind of roughly PPS.
Purchasing power.
Yeah, whereas Luxembourg is at about 1,600. So that's kind of more of a 3x-ish instead of a 10x-ish difference in disparity.
Difference, yeah.
So basically their point is that like places that do have minimum wages, there is still like a disparity in purchasing power for that minimum wage. But the disparity is a lot lower by just having one anyway, and potentially that would actually mean it would be a good number to pick a lower limit on, and then you could pick somewhere in between. So I think the way to do this would be taking the 90s Labour government approach, which is pick a number, and then the mechanism exists, and we can start tweaking the knobs once it's there.
Yeah, and
you could set a number. You could set a number that's above Bulgaria, but obviously below Luxembourg, because people are just not going to agree to a doubling their minimum wage thing.
Yeah, so that is an interesting way of doing it, because then I'd say the way you'd probably want to do it is you'd find what the middle number is, the mid range of purchasing power, and then probably go like a bit underneath it. I think the terminal mass is you would want a third of EU countries at the most to need to like increase their minimum wage. And also the other thing is on top of this, and I think is implied in everything we're saying but not as necessarily like we haven't actually stated, is that this is a floor. This is not this is the minimum wage now.
Similar to how the federal minimum wage works in the US, is like a lot of states have higher minimum wages. You just pick a number that is something you can get everyone to agree on, and then you have that mechanism in place, and then you can start changing it. And it would be very difficult for anyone to get rid of, because it would mean in some countries, then they would just not bother legislating their new minimum wage, would be probably how it would end up happening. So like, by you getting rid of it, you would then be like lowering the minimum wage in many countries, which people wouldn't get on board with. But it'd be a mechanism by which you could kind of force people to increase it.
I think also people understand relatively, especially when we're talking about wages, because people would be paying attention a bit more to this than they say where the like roaming charges thing. Although a fair amount of people did pay attention to that. Is that like if you state very clearly, this is a floor. I think people will understand that if it got lower in their country, it was because of the national government. As long as they understood. Either you're going to have countries celebrating because their wages get to go up.
Yeah.
Or you get countries that are a little bit skeptical, and therefore they just have to pay more attention to their local government, their national government.
Yeah, I don't think... I think the converse would be not giving people in Europe enough credit to figure out that if it was national news that their minimum wage was going down, that it was like the EU's fault. And they were like, the EU made us pay you less. We weren't allowed to pay you more. It was like, I think we're on to you.
Yeah, I mean, I would push back on that and said that if you were doing this, like if you did this tomorrow, there are countries that have already like cultivated that EU is the enemy climate that it could work. I'm thinking like Hungary.
Yeah, sure. That's reasonable.
And
I mean, Hungary is in the lower range, so they'd probably be going up though.
Yeah, that's fair. Good on them. But like, and I guess I was surprised with the like mass action turnout against Fidesz that happened with the like slave law thing. So maybe I'm underestimating.
Yeah,
Hungarian people.
We'll get into that later. But Yeah, I think this is like the thing I really like about this is the backdoor into like pushing progressive left-wing policies via this mechanism. So for instance, like it'd be a lot easier to legislate for things like the slave laws, for instance, that Hungary's trying to sneak in with like no paid overtime and stuff by having the pretext of, well, we already have a minimum wage law on the books, and therefore it's a lot easier for us to legislate on some of these things that you're doing very sketchy things on. And I guess it would lower a lot of the arguments around, it wouldn't get rid of, but it would lower a lot of the arguments around like guest worker stuff and the I'm forgetting the term for it, the rules they were trying to bring in last year about transit, like workers who move around, so like truck drivers, for instance, being paid not the wage in the country they're currently in, but the country they operate from. But if you're like, if you set a floor, that actually becomes a lot less complicated, because while they, you know, if you have it that they're just earning where they're operating from, at least you've improved that, and you don't have to fix this immediately if you're finding it's difficult to fix.
Yeah. So I think that's us coming to an end here in terms of like the idea of the European minimum wage. Yeah. Any final thoughts there?
No, Hugh? Just, you know, that'd be nice. It'd be nice.
That'd be nice. Yeah. The one that we talked about that was good. Not unfortunately, not really Franz Timmermans' plan of 60% minimum wage or median wage.
No, but I think he'd like putting it something on the table and saying like he was saying this usually in debates where, especially when he was debating Weber, where Weber would say things about how they should consider like doubling the border force and stuff, and spend more money on that, and then also like let the member states work things out for themselves in general. And Timmermans would be like, no, we should have a minimum wage and all these other pan-European projects I want to pay for. And I was like, yeah, good job, Timmermans. I like that. That contrast you've created, despite the fact that you and Weber otherwise agree on quite a lot.
Yeah, and I should also say, because we didn't mention this, but actually, like, the Bulgarian center-left party is really pushing this idea, because naturally they're at the bottom, and they're probably like, it'd be a way to increase the wage in Bulgaria where they don't have to actually seize national power.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Yeah, they don't seize national power or have the, like, roundabout debate. Because, like, going back to the UK example of bringing in £3.60 is, like, a very, very low number. That was still,
this
was
the
like,
90s. That was the 90s, yeah. We should state.
Yeah. But even then, it was a low number.
Yeah.
And, like, that was still met with, like, strong resistance from the Conservative Party.
Yeah.
This is, like, they happen to just not be in charge. But yeah, this is like I think this is a good way of doing it, to sneak it in.
Yeah.
And deal with any problems later.
All right. And that was another episode of Previously in Europe, which is produced and recorded by Hugh O'Brien and Kieran Dold. If you like this episode, why not tell a friend about it? That kind of stuff really helps a lot. And, you know, you could also shout us out on Apple Podcasts or wherever else there is reviews to be left, because we like reviews. Give us reviews. It helps the podcast magic to happen, I think. I'm not entirely sure. Another way you can support the podcast is to donate on our Patreon. You can be joined the such hallowed halls as these fine people: Dermot Burke, Drew Zarian, Justin Paul Salmons, Lisa Shalagina, and Niall McLaughlin. Those cool kids are donating above a certain amount to get their name shouted out, but there are other cool kids out there donating to us to keep us going, and we really appreciate you guys helping us out, helping us make podcasts where we talk about the EU minimum wage as a possible idea. That's kind of cool. What else? We have social media. We're on Facebook, we are on Twitter, we have an email address, previouslyineurope@gmail.com. You can find all this stuff on our website, previouslyineurope.eu. Thanks for listening.